Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Just Interesting podcast, the show where we talk about things that we find, well, just interesting. Robin, what are you doing with your hands there?
Casting a magic spell on the audience, obviously.
And of course, we've got Martin back with us this week, released
hello,
from prison.
Hello.
Back from the dead.
How are you doing, Martin?
I'm okay, thank you. Yeah, not too bad. A bit coldy, but other than that, okay overall. How are you guys? It's been apparently I was lost. I was arrested. I could go down that narrative too. Arrested and not feeling so great.
I think you were streaking.
That was it. Yeah. Course,
that's why you've got a cold, Martin. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Someone did ask in the comments, "How do you?" You said a career criminal was streaking. Like, how do you make a career out of it? Well, you know, if you look like this, you get paid.
Oh.
That, of course, is a joke for anyone who thinks I'm being serious. but yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you.
Good. Glad to hear it. And how are you, Robin? Are you doing good this week?
Yeah, I'm well, thank you. Happy to be here. It feels like a long time since the three of us were together, that's for sure.
Definitely.
So glad Martin's out of prison and that chain gang was short-lived. But it's good to have you back, mate. It's good to have you back. Yes. How are you doing, Alex?
Yes,
I'm doing all right. I'm doing fine. It's been a bit of a quiet week, to be honest. Yeah, not much is going on, really, other than just the same stuff in the world as always, all this horrible stuff going on. And and then, of course, Robin pops up on the message when we're thinking of ideas for what to discuss in the podcast. And he's like, "Hey, guys, do you want to discuss nuclear weapons this week?"
That's exactly what we all want to discuss at this time. Because if we're frightened enough.
Today we are going to be delving into the deep, dark world of nuclear weaponry. And which country is going to come up on top? Well, I mean, none of us are, let's be honest, if the worst was to happen. But which country has the strongest nuclear weapons? Mm-hmm. And... just kind of talk about nuclear weapons for a little bit. But if you have been fortunate enough to get the message, and this may not happen because we put it out quite late, but we are currently live to our Patreon members and our YouTube channel members. So if you're watching this in the future or listening to this and you're thinking, "Hey, I wish I could hang out with these hip, young, fun-loving dudes."
Right, 80s term.
Then feel free to come and support us over on Patreon or join us as a channel member. And we're going to be doing more of these exclusively for channel members and Patreon supporters. But if you don't fancy supporting us, don't worry, because these will still be going out as usual to everyone at a later date. But before we talk about the main topic this week, of course, we've got to discuss something interesting that we've learned this week. So, Robin, what interesting thing have you learned this week?
It was following up on something that you learned last time we discussed. You talked about
Alex. You're just
going to
fact check me.
No, not fact check. You prompted me to look something up, which was you were talking about chess and chess computers and chess tournaments between chess computers.
Okay.
And how humanity has reached the point where we no longer play sports and watch other people playing sports, but we make computers to play sports for us and then watch the computers playing the sports, which I thought was kind of funny. I looked that up and learned about AlphaZero, which is currently the top dog of the computer chess playing machines. But what makes AlphaZero unique is that, unlike other chess computers, which are all kind of programmed to play chess and which have access to chess books online and other chess technique guides and end game guides and things like that, so they can analyze what good opening moves are and what good closing moves are. AlphaZero, which was built by DeepMind, which is owned by Alphabet Incorporated, aka Google, created AlphaZero to be completely self-taught. And it taught itself to play chess in 4 hours.
I found this on the web.
Oh my gosh. I said Google. I said Google and then it woke up.
AlphaZero is invading.
Okay. That was not planned, everyone. I'm actually scared now.
This is what happens when you're live. Anything can happen. Wow.
That's the first time that's ever happened to me.
Also,
I don't use Google. That's really weird.
Also, Robin.
No, he's doing it again.
It will do.
Robin, If you don't want to encourage the Robot Robin jokes, why are you looking up like AI-related facts for us every week?
Well, you know, you did it. You said it. You did it first. And then I just looked it up.
It just peaked your AI circuits. I mean, curiosity.
Who's better than me at chess? No, I wanted to... yes, so...
I learned it. I mean, the machine learned it in 4 hours.
Yes. It did. Yeah, so after just 4 hours of teaching itself to play chess by playing 5,000 games from scratch, it had no knowledge of chess until it taught itself what the moves were by playing chess. 5,000 games in 4 hours, it became better than the world champion chess playing computer.
Wow. I mean, how does it just teach itself chess without... Like, do they? I don't really understand how that works. I mean, I'm not expecting you to have known all the details of how that works.
Yeah. But like, well, no, I guess it's like a human learns to play chess. Like, you might turn up to a chess game that's going on in a park or in a chess club at school, and you say, "I want to play chess." Start moving the pieces, and someone says, "That's not how that moves. That's not how that moves." And then you get good by playing games against good opponents, and ideally you learn to be better, right?
So the rules were kind of imprinted there, and anytime it made a wrong move, they'd be like, "Nope, can't do that."
I imagine it must have been playing against another itself or the computer. So every time it kept on repeating the same move over and over again, and then calculated what the outcome was based on that, whether the game ran through to a good conclusion or a bad conclusion, and then took those millions of data points and thought, okay, the optimum move in this, like any algorithm, I guess, it's just learning each time you make do something, it just learns whether that's like the optimum in that position or not.
Yeah, I guess that's exactly how it worked. And it must have worked because it then played the reigning champion of chess computers, played 100 games, and won 25 games as white, 3 as black, and drew the remaining 72. So the reigning champion didn't get a single win.
So that shows there is an actual advantage in starting as white. In chess.
Yeah. It does seem that would seem to prove that, wouldn't it?
When you said the reigning champion, I was like, oh, is that like that? What's it? Norwegian guy, Magnus Carlsen, is it? Magnus Carlsen? Like the best player in the world. Well, was. Yeah, I don't know if he still is, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know my famous chess players. I'm going to come clean.
No, I don't know.
I'm not that familiar.
I think he's like the big one that most people know, to be honest. I say most people that
follow chess.
They're the real rock stars.
I do have a quote actually from a previous grandmaster. Sorry, he's still a grandmaster, sorry, but like a previous world champion, Danish grandmaster Peter Nielsen, who compared AlphaZero to a superior alien species.
There we go.
It's it is creepy when you see machines learning from trial and error. And there's some more like visual examples of that I've seen where they're trying to teach AI programs to walk, like digital things to how to walk, and they record all the attempts. So like the first time it's like watching a baby trying to walk kind of thing, and then they perfect it over like hundreds of different attempts. Spooky though, it's
Yeah, it's amazing though. Yeah.
If nuclear weapons don't kill us all, then
chess AI machines
chess machines probably will. So
exactly.
It's all good all the way down. Before I come on to you, Martin, I just want to say hello to the Super Show Jonesy in the chat. Says howdy, fellas. Howdy, Super Show Jonesy. How's it going? And Raven Meekin is also in the chat. Hi from Australia. Love you guys.
Hey, Raven.
Thanks for tuning in. How's it all going, you guys? And let us know what you think of AI chess computers. That's all we've got so far.
Quite niche. But,
quite niche. Martin, what have you learned this week?
Mine is taking the bar down, lowering the bar so much that it's kind of almost embarrassing.
No.
But my facts about P. and in particular, asparagus pea. So, I don't know whether you guys eat asparagus or have had asparagus before, but one of the things that's commonly associated with eating asparagus is like, oh, it makes your pea smell of like asparagus and ammonia and like quite strong. But I have to say that I'm one of the 58% of men and 62% of women, I don't fall into that category, who okay. can't smell asparagus pea as being anything no. different than normal pea.
Seriously?
Really? Wow.
I mean, maybe I'm not eating enough asparagus, but I'm wow. one of that percentile. And I just wanted to ask you guys, can you smell, firstly, do you eat asparagus? This might be a null and void point. But if you do you smell asparagus pea? That's my question for you.
So I do eat asparagus. It's one of my preferred vegetables, actually. I mean, that's not really saying much because all vegetables are terrible. So,
asparagus is a good vegetable.
But I do notice it. I do notice it. It's not like that noticeable, but it's definitely something there for sure. Yeah.
There we go. And Robin,
so I'm definitely on the yes side there.
I can smell it. Yeah. But I don't have asparagus very often. So what was that percentage again?
58% of men, 62% of women can't.
So actually the majority of humanity.
That's... majority of humanity can't, even though it's
the reigning myth. Yeah.
Wow.
That makes no sense.
Exactly. The majority of people can't smell asparagus pea. When actually, you know, it's often touted as being something that is...
it's a thing.
It's very odorous. Anyway, that was my disgusting fact.
I mean, a significant portion do smell it. Like, I feel like that's, even though, the majority doesn't, the majority of food doesn't affect your pee smell, does it? Really, in a noticeable way? Is it just exclusively asparagus, or does anything else?
I think we've got to open this up to the audience here. This could be a chain. This could be a proper chain going on in the comment section. What is the worst thing that makes your pee smell the worst? There we go.
Have you guys ever had a Barocca? That makes it glow in the dark.
What is that? Oh gosh.
No, it makes it very
sounds bad. Loose.
Really?
It's probably healthy. It's just full of vitamins and stuff. Probably. It's probably all right.
Well, whether you
someone doesn't drink their own pee, do they, Alex?
Yeah. Got to get all those nutrients. but it's down to your genes. It's down to your genetic makeup, whether you do smell asparagus pea in particular, but I imagine all kinds of pea is due to your genes. So gene variants make people either smell it or not. So... yeah, so it's amazing the very small insignificant things in this time of global conflict that are interesting, and I guess one of them is asparagus pea and genes.
It's a useful reminder, Martin, that fact about come the post-apocalypse, when we're all living in the wilderness and trying to live like hunter-gatherers because it's the only way to survive because society's broken down and there is no habitational technology. Humans are vulnerable to predators. Because that's the kind of thing where you're like, I'm not like making any noise or smell, but the lions and tigers are like, I can hear you, I can see you, I can smell you.
I can smell your asparagus pea.
And I'm right behind. Yeah, exactly. Just imagine what other things we think, I don't smell of anything. And all the other animals around us are like, those humans really stink.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I imagine that is the case.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Super Show Jonesy says.
I haven't seen that on planet Earth at all. I haven't seen David Attenborough talking about that. So
this primate can smell my piss.
Yes, it is asparagus. Apologies, Robin, I interrupted you. What's Super Show Jonesy brought to the table?
Oh, he said morning after cider pee is pretty bad. That's what he contributed to the conversation.
I will agree with that.
Cider often smells of pee beforehand, doesn't it?
Morning after cider pee. Oh, you got cider, nice.
What's that one?
This is Thistley Cross, locally brewed in Scotland. Oh, it's actually one of the best ciders I've had. It's delicious.
One of the best ciders in the world. Hey.
Oh, lovely.
Nice. Is it a straight up apple or pear, or is it a flavoured?
It's an apple.
It's an asparagus cider.
They do a whiskey cask one as well, which is pretty good.
So they take a whiskey cask and put cider in it?
I guess
Yeah, that'd be it.
Definitely the wrong way around.
And a cider cask and put whiskey in it.
Yeah, get that little bit of apple flavour into your whiskey.
Yeah, you can do both. Keep on switching between the two. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I did a thing.
Oh no, sorry. Go on, Robin.
I'm just dragging out the length of the podcast now. I was going to say that Six Nations, those of you who are rugby fans, concluded yesterday. I know Martin's a fan. He will have watched it. I did a thing where I drank a whiskey each half of the teams, starting with the home team. So I drink a Scotch and an Irish for the Scotland-Ireland games. I drink a Welsh whiskey and an English whiskey for the England Wales games. I had a brandy for the French games. Nice. I didn't bother to get any grappa for the Italians, which is clearly why they did so badly, because I wasn't drinking a national drink of Italy. But, you know.
So, Robin, you were just getting pissed.
It was pretty bad one day. We had, not yesterday was three games, but we missed one. But another time we had two games and I had multiple whiskeys in each half. So I had about five whiskeys.
In 80 minutes? That's quite a lot.
No, across two games. Across two games, yeah. And yeah, I was pretty asleep by the end of it.
Well, I'm not into rugby union, as you both well know. But this week, I actually, speaking of drinking, I watched the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia podcast. I don't know if anyone else in the chat listens to the It's Always Sunny podcast, but they did one this week where they got drunk and did a podcast. They started the podcast by like drinking three shots of whiskey or bourbon. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering what you guys felt about that and whether we should give that a go at some point. It's called The Gang Browns Out.
I think it's a great idea.
To be fair, we've been close before now, haven't we? Where we've been like, we're just gonna have a whiskey or have a beer or something. Then we chatted for ages before it started. And we'd be like, we should probably record this now. It has happened, but it hasn't happened live.
No.
It hasn't happened live. Not yet. Actually, that's a good point. I'm not sure what YouTube would think about that kind of thing. That kind of behavior.
They wouldn't mind.
I'm sure they wouldn't.
Yeah. I mean, there's that whole podcast, isn't there? Like, was it Drunk Women Solving Crimes? Which is essentially an idea pitched by someone we used to work with, if you remember, who pitched a drunk history channel, which is another thing that exists. We're mad keen, but weirdly, the bosses did not approve of company expenses going on the booze for people to get drunk in the office.
I was close to getting a craft beer show commissioned. But I think the commercial team were kind of like, yeah, we can get this in like integrated for like Heineken and Carlisle. Like,
that's not craft. That's
not quite. It's not quite the right lines.
Like, you go to marketing team like, take craft beer, the opposite of that.
Exactly. Although Heineken have basically bought up a whole load of craft breweries anyway, so there'd be more room for it. But it might feel a little bit selling out. To the big boys, so it didn't happen.
Yeah, and we are never sellouts, are we guys?
We are not sellouts.
I'm just waiting to sell out. Any opportunity to sell out.
Any day.
I'll snap Heineken, it up in a heartbeat. Heineken, we're over here.
Wave!
Shall I tell you both what I learned this week?
Yes, please.
So to raise the tone after Martin's fact about pee, I learnt about the US President Warren Harding.
Warren G. Harding, sure.
Warren G. Harding, of course, yeah. Who, as we all know, was responsible for...
Hardings. The manufacturers.
I don't know. I didn't know anything about Warren Harding before this week.
I didn't either.
No, what was he responsible for?
Well... He was only in office from 1921 to 1923. Sadly, he died whilst in office. He was one of the presidents that did from what was probably a heart attack. And yeah, nothing drastic except for...
What was he known for?
Saving the Constitution.
Ooh.
In a literal sense.
Like Nicolas Cage style.
Not quite Nicolas Cage style, but like... Kind of also not like Nicolas Cage style. So he saw the Constitution...
Like Donald J. Trump style. Or...
Before this, the US Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, was just kind of hung up on a wall, and it had been hung up for decades at this point.
Oh, gosh, really?
And he was like looking at it and thinking, that's not going to last. that's not a good idea, is it?
Bad idea, yeah.
So he was the president responsible for making sure it was properly stored.
Oh, my
stored
gosh.
In a protective glass case, because it was rapidly deteriorating at this point.
Yeah. Be brushing past it.
It's a bit ratty when you see facsimiles of it. It is a bit ratty. I assumed there was some dramatic story behind that, but no, it's just...
It could have been pristine if anyone before Warren Harding thought of it.
Yeah.
Imagine it being like next to the calendar.
Yeah.
like a Cliff Richard calendar next to it's the Constitution. Oh.
They use it as a coaster on this desk.
Yeah.
Dartboard.
But yeah, so he's known as the president that saved the Constitution.
Good on you, Warren G. Harding.
So there you go. And I'm sure had he not died in office, he would have been responsible for much even greater things.
Maybe that was it. God was like, Warren, you've done your bit. You saved the Constitution. Time to go.
That's it now. Yeah.
There we go.
Well, that's what I learned this week. Shall we move on to our favourites comments of the week last week's episode, or any comments, actually, from any episodes? You guys find one, or shall I jump in?
Yeah, I've got a comment from Rich L. Two words. Could be Rochelle, but it's two words. So Rich L. On a video from a few weeks ago, actually, a video essay by you, Alex. Are humans about to become immortal?
Oh.
Yeah, which is a great video, genuinely great video. And Rich L. says, gosh, I missed your wittiness so much. Like a blast from the past from the channel that shall not be named. Keep up the good work, guys. May more audiences notice your channel and give it a well-deserved boost. And four thumbs up. And I agree entirely. That video was great. And I'm really glad it ticked Rich L's boxes. So thank you, Rich L.
Thank you very much. That's such a nice comment. No, I really enjoyed doing it. And I've been writing another one, but I do need to get back into it. I put it on the back burner, but I need to get back into it. I will make another one this year at least.
yes which will be like a 200% increase on our output last year.
In fairness, it will be. That is lovely. Do you have a comment, Martin?
Yeah, I've got one from JC that says, I want you guys to know that your podcast is a rock for me in a sea of depression. So I'm sorry to hear about depression, but I'm glad that we can be something that is hopefully a calming voice. And then your pleasing voices and restrained optimism are a great comfort when things are terrible. Thank you. So I just thought that was lovely of you to say, and restrained optimism. Do you guys agree with that? Sometimes we can be a little bit cynical, but maybe the voices mask it.
Yeah, I guess cautious optimism is the best we ever get. So thank you.
I think it's me trying to, like, I try and dial back my cynicism. If I was as cynical as I am in real life on the podcast, this would be a very depressing affair, I think.
That's a really nice comment.
Yeah, but I find that with a lot of other podcasts that I listen to as well. It's like a podcast and just being able to listen to something that takes your mind off what's going on in the world for a few minutes or an hour or whatever. You know, it's kind of, it is that bit of comfort, isn't it? To have that regularity, not so regular with us, but regularity of a podcast to listen to. It's kind of, it's a nice thing. So
that's true.
Thank you for podcasts all over the land. And thank you, JC, for that lovely comment.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, lovely comments this week. Absolutely lovely. So I've got a comment also from last week's episode from James Kelm, who says, y'all calm down. It's just World War III. You need to be worried about World War IV. And this was obviously, we were talking about Putin and the situation in Ukraine. And I'm not sure if I'd agree with this one, really, because World War IV isn't that one, if it ever happened, would kind of be fine. Isn't that thinking like, don't worry about what World War III is fought with, because World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones. Isn't that it?
Yeah, it strikes me as maybe more Fallout 4 rather than World War IV.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems a little bit kind of...
All right, yeah. I misinterpreted the logic of that wasteland comment. Yeah. I thought maybe he was saying there'll always be another world war in which to worry. And my response to that would be, well, why would we worry about World War IV if there's going to be another world war after World War III, there'll just be another and then World War VI and on and on and on. That's a depressing thought.
I'm worried about the next one.
Yeah.
The one that's going to impact me, I guess. Oh, dear.
There we go. Leaving on a high note.
I thought we'd I'd say that one because we're going to get into the depressing topic anyway. So let's get into it. Who has the strongest nukes? I'm going to go out on a limb and say the US.
Right, we can go home now. Well done.
Well done. Yeah, podcast over. Discussion ended. I mean, it's an interesting question because there's a quality over quantity question, right, here? Because who's got this? What's the strongest nuclear arsenal? Is it the one with the most warheads, or is it the one with the most powerful warheads? Or does it even matter?
Does it matter? Does it matter?
It's a nuclear bomb. Does it really matter how what the difference is between 25 megatons and 50 megatons? Because whoever's underneath it isn't going to care.
Well, you see this, don't you? You see, if you look at the graphs of number of nuclear armaments in the world. You see this, of course, this huge spike up to the Cold War and the US and Russia being neck and neck with the UK gradually rising as well. But then you see, pretty much since the 1980s, like a gradual decline, well, quite rapid decline, in fact, of warheads. And it's like, oh, wow, the world's becoming more and more peaceful. And then it's like, actually, this one nuclear warhead is like 1,000 times stronger than the one dropped in Hiroshima. And it's like, oh, crap. Like, it's a false sense of security when people are disarming, when they're as powerful as they are, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, the whole thing about all the data essentially we have on how powerful warheads are is based entirely on the nuclear tests that have been done. And the last nuclear tests from Russia was 1961, wasn't it? Mm. The last test in the was, I think, before then, perhaps, or maybe in the 80s. So it's all kind of, it's almost impossible to calculate just how big a blast the nuclear warheads currently deployed by superpowers could create without the testing taking place. And not many nations are testing at the moment. Obviously, we know North Korea has been testing. No one else has been.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I wonder. Like, how do they know how powerful their nuclear weapons are? Do they just know based on calculations without detonating?
Yeah.
Because there's testing.
Yeah, I think it's basically modeling, which you can basically model anything with quite a high degree of accuracy. And there's the terribly terrifying mock-ups of if a bomb landed on London, if a nuclear bomb landed. I think it was North Korea, actually, when there was the whole thing of North Korea testing their missiles last time. I think it might have been the BBC or perhaps The Guardian did like a map. So if you're in the center here, like if you're at work today, for instance, if you're at work, you're definitely fried, you're dead. If you're at home, you only get like severely burnt and radio and poisoning that would mean that you'll die anyway. And that's like one nuclear weapon being dropped. And North Korea alone have got 45 and Russia have got over 6,000. So we're in trouble regardless of who drops it. And the power. But hopefully, fingers crossed, it won't come to that. Fingers crossed.
So
optimistic.
So what I mean, yeah, let's going into the quality over quantity with the amount that is already there. So yeah, Russia has like 6,000. I don't think they've got that amount active. So if you know, mutually assured destruction was to happen tomorrow, MAD was to happen, I think they've got like 1,500 or so, is that right? Around 1,000, 1,500?
Just shy of 1,500 are active,
and another thousands
are available, and then another 2,000 or so are decommissioned or something. They're out of date, essentially. You can't use.
Yeah, but even if they were all the same level of strength as the ones dropped on Hiroshima, that's pretty much end game, right? Yeah. Still.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if they've got ones 1,000 times more powerful, then it doesn't matter.
That's it. It doesn't to a point, and that's why dearmament was such a. Well, I wouldn't say it's not a myth, but it's so much. Unless you're reducing it to basically nothing, then it doesn't make much difference, does it? Really, your capabilities. At the peak, there was over 70,000 warheads between Russia and the US alone, and now there's like. 12,000.
Yeah, in the world nowadays, there's about 12,000, and down from in the mid-80s, I think it was 70,000. Yeah.
Do you know what? At this point, though, I almost wish there was just 70, 80,000. Because if they're going to go off, I want to actually make... I want to make the alien civilization on the other side of the galaxy see it, you know? I want everyone to notice. We're going to be dead anyway. I want... Yeah, exactly.
And the aliens are like, what's the 4th of July, you idiots? What's July?
Oh, my gosh.
comment in the chat, Raven Meekin says, with nukes, I think, unfortunately, a mountain size is irrelevant, as once a person fires, the rest of the world will follow. And yeah, that's the whole premise of mutually assured destruction, isn't it? Just there's no point using your nukes because everybody else will retaliate.
Do you
missile defense though, systems, right? That'll be fine.
Do you think, though, that... So it... Is there a reason other than maybe Putin or Kim Jong-un going completely mad, like a dictator or something going mad and ordering it? Is there a reason why a country would launch all their nukes at once? Because I could imagine the scenario where like maybe one gets launched by mistake. And in that scenario, I don't think it's immediately mutually assured destruction. I think they would kind of escalate to de-escalate is the policy, right? So the US might launch a retaliation strike.
Right, one.
But then it's like, okay, we're done. Equals pequals, you know, one for one. And then if there's more retaliation, then it escalates. And then we get mutually assured destruction. But I don't think it would, if it was going to happen, it would be immediate mutually assured destruction, unless some horrible mistake happened. Mm. What do you guys think?
It was only recently, wasn't it, where India, I want to get this right, actually. One of India or Pakistan fired a missile, not a nuclear missile, of course, fired a missile into enemy territory by a mistake. I think it was India into Pakistan. Mm. Well, apologies if that's wrong. It was one, I mean, it was in that conflict on the border.
It was, yes. Yeah. Yes, a few years ago.
There was one really recently. They like held their hands up and were like, sort of basically apologies, we didn't mean to do that, and it got diffused from there,
so to speak.
So it was okay. In March 9th, so when's that, 11, when as recording 11 days ago, the Indian Air Force fired a BrahMos medium range cruise missile from the garrison town of Ambala, about 200 kilometers north of the capital, New Delhi.
Wow. That's scary.
And the news headline for this one is errant Indian missile nearly led to Pakistan retaliatory strike. So these things can happen. Of course, a bit different with a nuclear weapon versus a cruise missile. You think people might have a little bit more control over it.
So they must have
mistakes
got in,
can happen.
They must have got in touch with India or Pakistan very quickly then and said this was a mistake. Like, I wonder if maybe not with like a cruise missile, but with a nuclear missile, there must be a way if they do fire it, like a intercontinental ballistic missile, there must be a way to stop it from going off. Because the actual act of making it have a nuclear detonation, there's a very intricate series of things that have to happen for it to make a nuclear blast, isn't there? So like a nuclear rocket, it doesn't just explode and then it's a nuclear bomb. There's like a chemical reaction that happens in the warhead itself.
There's actually two stages, aren't there? To split the atom. Yeah, there's the second stage that creates the massive explosion that we know as thermonuclear, I guess, is what we call it now. We've all seen Mission Impossible, where Tom Cruise hits the abort button just before it hits the city. You know, that has to be real. That has to be a plausible thing.
Is that in the first one?
That's the fourth one.
I haven't seen it. I was going to say, I don't remember. I've seen the first two. Anyway,
Martin, catch up, yeah.
Which one was the one with, what's his name? Oh, the guy who died. He was great. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, that was three. Yeah.
Ah, three. Okay, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think I've seen up to three.
So guys, you're missing out. Yeah. They get great from 4, 5, 6 onwards. I say that they've only made 6. 7 and 8 are yet to come out.
But 7 and 8 will be great.
They will be amazing.
Ghost Protocol, is that one?
Yeah, that's right. That's the fourth one. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Anyway, sorry, I derailed us.
That's all right.
Like Tom Cruise.
Hmm. Saying that they must be able to abort the missile itself. And that's the whole premise of a lot of missile defense systems, isn't it? To shoot down into the intercontinental ballistic missile.
Yeah.
Or it makes impact, because shooting it down and exploding it in the atmosphere won't trigger a nuclear explosion, because like Alex says, it has to be armed and then go through this process on impact to create a nuclear explosion.
So here's a question for you guys then. Would you feel safer if countries had reliable, like, because they were working on the Star Wars program, weren't they, in like the 80s or was it the 80s or 70s?
Ronald Reagan launched it, yeah.
Lasers to shoot down potential nuclear rockets. And I think it was scrapped, wasn't it? Any kind of potential defense systems. There's some defense systems, but it's not feasible to have them actually stop. You know, a country like Russia going mutually assured destruction.
Well, that's what's been worrying with Russia, because they've, for the first time ever, they've deployed in the Ukraine their hypersonic missiles, which are too fast for their anti-missile defense systems to work against, because they're hypersonic, so they're just going too fast for their counter-missiles to hit. So I'm pretty sure all missile defense systems are based on launching some kind of projectile to intercept the incoming missile.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And they haven't actually developed defenses against Russia. I think it's their priority for it. I mean, it might switch, but is towards North Korea as opposed to Russia.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's changed, but the idea is that, as you say, with Russia's supersonic plus their arsenal, they haven't wanted to create, they haven't bothered to create it because they've just got so much firepower. It's like, it's almost like, what's the point? You know, that the meme of someone spraying a water gun at like the forest fire. It's like, it just feels a little bit like that. Yeah.
But would you guys feel safer if countries had the technology to stop those hypersonic missiles? If the Star Wars project had, you know, bore fruit, do you think you'd feel safer if there were these lasers protecting everyone? And I say that because would that then encourage people to then develop even more dangerous weapons that could then, you know, get around?
Yeah, that's
that.
The problem, isn't it? It's escalation.
It's always escalation.
As a hypersonic missile, Russia developed that to get past missile defense systems. And so that's exactly what happens. Each time somebody comes up with an effective, their opponent will come up with something that will get around that defense.
Yeah. So we're close to the top of... they can't go much higher in terms of you know, the power of what we have. I mean, you probably can, but there's no point. You know, there's some diminishing returns. Everyone's dead anyway. You know, it's
launching the Death Star in 2025.
It does feel a little bit like that. It's like, yes, it could cause further escalation if people had ways to. But what's the point of further escalation? Like, we might as well just settle it. The fact that we're completely escalated currently. Is there much room to go any further? That's the question.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, okay, similar question then. On a similar kind of area. But if all the countries around the world agreed to nuclear disarmament and all nuclear weapons didn't exist today, would you feel safer then?
If no nuclear weapons existed, would all countries have the ability to create them? All the countries that already have them have the ability to create nuclear weapons?
In as realistic a scenario as could feasibly happen, all the kind of information surrounding nuclear weapons was erased. But again, it has to, like, in a feasible real world scenario. So naturally, people are going to be alive that still know how to make them. And
If there's the capacity to make them, everyone's disarmed.
Yeah.
In the current scenario, I don't think that probably wouldn't be great, to be honest. There is something. Yeah. There is something about mad, and it's almost the argument that people use for, to a lesser extent, but the gun rights lobbyists. They're like, well, if everyone has guns, then we're safe.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a bit like
the only thing that can stop a bad country with nukes is a good country with nukes.
Yeah.
But you look at Putin right now, and would he be more likely to use a nuke if the US didn't have one? Yeah, of course he would. 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know if he actually would use it, though, because if he's the only bully in the playground with a gun, then he doesn't actually have to use it for everyone to obey his orders. The only reason, I think in a weird way, he's more inclined to use nukes because the USA and its allies, France and the UK, have nukes that might retaliate, because particularly in the case of Ukraine, there's I think Russia's military, broadly speaking, is about three times the size in every aspect: aircraft, tanks,
at least
missiles, vehicles and troops especially. So when you when Russia invades Ukraine, it's such a one-sided fight. He doesn't need to use nukes. It's not like in the Second World War when the only time nukes have been deployed militarily by the USA, let's never forget this, against the Japanese was precisely because the Japanese just wouldn't give up. And yeah, they were desperate. The USA just knew that they couldn't win the war within 5 years without losing millions and millions of more Americans. Whereas even though Ukraine is putting up a fantastic fight, you know, if Putin wanted to bring his full military might to bear, he could, and he would win in Ukraine.
Yeah.
So I think if he had nukes and no one else did, I don't think he would use it, because Ukraine would be terrified of the nukes being the next thing. I think actually, ironically, the fact that other nations have it is posturing, just to be clear. I don't think he's actually going to use it, because I'm so insightful, I know exactly what Putin's thinking. But he put his nuclear defenses onto high alert at the beginning of March. He's made very thinly veiled threats to use nuclear weapons against anyone who tries to help Ukraine. And I think all that is just posturing. It's just to heighten the tension.
I think so. But in a scenario where Russia had nuclear weapons and the US didn't, and the US decided to create a no-fly zone and started shooting down Russian jets, I'm not saying he would suddenly go straight to nukes, but it'd be more of a risk.
Yeah.
Than perhaps currently. Yeah, I don't know.
I think that just goes back to... America is already afraid of World War III, which is why the no-fly zone isn't happening with NATO. America, the whole of NATO is afraid of it. So in a situation where nobody but Russia had nukes, I think they'd be even less likely to impose a no-fly zone, because they'd be super afraid of the nukes.
It's more of a hypothetical. If the conflict escalated and he was the only one that had nuclear weapons, would he... use them potentially.
But I agree that he would be inclined to use them if he wanted to. But I think if he wanted to, it would literally just be for the sake of it.
For the sake of it, which the way he's acting is kind of like...
A bit scary, isn't it? Because I think, as I said last week, like up until, like a month ago, everyone was saying, oh, there's no way he would launch a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. That just would never happen. That would be suicide for Russia. He would never do it. And then he did it. So now everyone's kind of judging, like, well, is daddy's hat fallen off, Has he turned a little bit? He hasn't got his best thinking cap on. So who knows? But also, like, if you back, if you back a dog into a corner, will he bite?
Good question.
I don't think he expected the response from the West that he got with all the economic sanctions, maybe, and the resistance being put up in Ukraine. Is he feeling a bit backed into a corner right now? It's a scary position to be in.
I think he does care about his legacy.
Mm.
And destroying the world is probably not great for his legacy. But also, He'd be feeling backed up for sure. There's no two ways about that. But he can't escalate. And in terms of nuclear weapons, he's not going to suddenly use a nuclear weapon because of economic sanctions. That'd be mad. Yeah. That would be genuinely insane.
Yeah.
I still think it's crazy. That's just, sorry, digressing completely, but that no one really brings, well, no one, people don't constantly bring up the fact that the United States did just drop a nuclear weapon on civilians.
Yeah.
Like 70 years ago.
Killed at least 200,000, probably.
That's genuinely mental, isn't it?
It's horrific.
It's horrendous war crime atrocity.
And to this day, I think, isn't it an annual thing? The Japanese government makes an official apology, doesn't it? To the USA on the anniversary of the bombings, I believe.
The Japanese government does?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah,
sorry,
that's how mental
you dropped
it is.
The bomb on us. What?
Yeah, sorry, we misbehaved so badly that you had to use the bomb. I'm pretty sure that's how it goes.
So, that's the justification. People say, like, oh, they ended up saving millions of lives by doing that. But could they have, like, just shown off that technology, like, dropped it, a few kilometers outside of Tokyo or something, and been like, well, like in a regional area, and say, like, look, this is what is going to be happening in the next few days. Could they have done that? Like, I don't know. I'm not a military strategist.
No, but that's a reasonable point. Yeah, that's a reasonable point.
But it's also such a stupid justification. It's like, like Putin dropping a nuclear weapon on the US and saying, well, the war probably would have escalated in Europe and you'd have got involved. So so I saved millions of lives.
It's such
a stupid thing, isn't it? Such a stupid.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. If anyone's still listening in the chat, what are your thoughts ridiculous. On the US dropping the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki? Was it a net positive, or was it actually
any strong thoughts?
Horrific war crime. And if you're listening to this at a later date or watching us on YouTube, let us know on Twitter what you think of this. I'm at just Alexing.
At Martin Interesting is on screen, but if you're listening on audio, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I'm at All Time Robin.
Or feel free to message us at our Just Interesting Twitter account, which is JInterestingYT. Rolls off the tongue.
It does indeed.
Gentlemen, shall we... sorry, go on.
I was going to say, shall we just round off this conversation, though, by listing who has nuclear bombs?
Who has them?
Just in case. Yeah, who has them? Well, luckily, it's currently a short list.
should also do a ranking out of 10 of how likely we think they are.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. So the countries that we know definitely have nuclear weapons are Russia has the most.
10 out of 10.
Definitely the least.
It has just over 6,000. Then it's the USA with 5,500.
7 out of
10. And then there's a big gap, and we got China with just 350.
If I'm not mistaken, China is one of the few that are actually growing their nuclear arsenal right
100%,
now.
100%, yeah. They are not shrinking their arsenal. They are growing it, yeah. Sorry, Martin, I didn't get your feedback on the United States' likelihood, is it?
Oh, likelihood. Okay, so...
out of 10.
Yeah. Oh, it's not that likely, is it? It's a 3 out of 10.
In this hypothetical, is this just like out of the blue?
It's completely arbitrary. there's no real thought behind it. We're given a score out of 10 because people love that kind of shit.
Well, we'll come back to this podcast in 5 years' time and see how close we were.
When we plug into like the last remaining computer on Earth into like the one remaining outlet whilst we're dying of radiation poisoning.
Yeah. So after China, we've got France, 290. France has. I think that's got to be close to zero chance.
Yeah, it's a 1 out of 10. Yeah. 1 out of 10. No time frame, but just 1 out of 10.
Yeah. And then it's good old UK in fifth place with 225.
7 out of 10. Boris Johnson slips, falls over, and lands on the bus.
I definitely put us above France in terms of likeliness to use them. Yeah.
Because at the very, I think if the USA were to launch nukes, they would get us to do it for them first.
Go on.
Yeah. So in sixth place.
This is maybe pointless me even asking, but selfishly, as someone who lives in the UK, is there any safe place on this island from it, do you think?
Yeah, surely the Highlands.
Highlands, yeah.
Just move a bit more north.
Because there's no major targets in the Highlands. And the Highlands are
I'm definitely gone where I am in Edinburgh, right? Because
they'll
put one right slap between Edinburgh and Glasgow and get two for the price of one, I guess.
I think they'd be both individually, I think.
Yeah, they can.
Because Glasgow's got the Trident base, remember? That's where the submarines are based. So they're definitely going to hit Glasgow. And Edinburgh is the capital, so they hit Edinburgh.
Yeah.
They might even go for Inverness just out of spite.
Lowly bombs can fall on Slough.
Yes. Oh dear. So in sixth place we've got Pakistan with 165, which is more than number seven, India, 156.
Now with Pakistan and India, I always think like it's a little bit. They're bordering, aren't they? And do you really want to fire a nuclear weapon into your neighbour? Now, some people in both of those countries might say yes. You've got to think, if you're using a very powerful nuclear weapon, the ramifications of that from the nuclear fallout could be quite severe for your own country.
You'd think so.
Shitting on your doorstep.
A little bit. But at the same time, a lot of experts say that they are the most likely countries in the world to use a nuke.
We've made videos on that before, I think.
We have done.
I think we have,
In a former life, but... Yeah.
How dangerous is India was one, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's... And yeah, possibly even how dangerous is Pakistan as well.
We did both, yeah. We did how dangerous is pretty much every country in the world.
Yeah.
Got down to like Belgium, we're like, they're just not dangerous.
There was definitely a point where we made a video, we're like, this place is great, you know, this place is fine. And in eighth place, and here we're into the unofficial countries that aren't supposed to have it, because these are countries that have developed their nuclear technology since the international treaties were signed to ban it. But Israel has almost 100, which is quite a lot for a relatively small country. I mean, I say UK's got 225, so...
Yeah.
I mean,
should we say that? Isn't all this information kind of like a tiny bit speculative? Like no one...
Yeah, it's all a bit estimated, yeah.
Places aren't really disclosing how many they've got.
How many do Iraq have, Tony Blair?
Well, that's the thing, Iran, you know, the Iran... Technically, there's nothing stopping Iran anymore, thanks to Trump, from developing nuclear weapons. So they're currently not on the list because nobody knows what they've done since Trump withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal. And also, if you're inclined to agree with Trump, nobody knows exactly how many they developed, even when they were under the Iran nuclear disarmament deal. And then in last place, with only 50, is good old North Korea.
Hey, why am I reacting like that?
Hey, join the club.
Korea.
Yeah. And just in case anyone's interested, what we do know about North Korea, because they have been testing nukes, is that their last test was as powerful, I think, as the weakest warhead in the US arsenal.
Hey, you're rubbish.
I believe.
Don't goad him.
But at least 10 times, if not 20 times more powerful than Fat Man and Little Boy.
Still not great, is it? Is that Kim Jong-un?
Yeah, that's Kim Jong-un.
Fat Man and Little Boy.
Together, rolled in one. Yeah.
I mean, so what I'm wondering is a lot of these numbers aren't really updated that frequently. So countries like Russia have the most amount of nukes, technically. But nukes are very expensive to maintain. And Russia's economy is not that big. I think it's about the size of Italy's.
Really?
Wow. So they're saying they've got all these nukes. I'm kind of thinking, especially based on their kind of performance militarily in Ukraine, I'm actually wondering how accurate that number is. And how many nukes they have. I'm not saying that they don't have nukes.
Yeah.
I'm saying I wouldn't be surprised if that was vastly overestimated, the amount of active nukes.
Ones that would actually have an effect, like the one that hits London would just damp squib.
The one
that hits Newcastle goes off.
Yeah. Because it's one of those, I mean, what percentage of their total monies, dollars, do they spend on nuclear weapons? Because they're spending a vast majority while a lot of people live in poverty, whereas the Italians, that's spending a lot of it on
pasta.
What do the Italians spend the money on? Pasta, pasta.
Just pasta. Fast cars and pasta. That's all they do.
Stopping the Colosseum from falling over.
Russian military, the budget for the Russian military is $77 billion a year compared to the US's, which is over $600 billion.
Still,
bit
still
of a disparity there. See, in a way, though, Alex, that just makes me like if that's true that the Russian, and you make a good point that the Russian,
I'm not willing to bet on
that. it may not be reliable, right? But that's kind of classic Soviet Russia, isn't it? Where the technology may be old and rusty,
but it could work.
It could work, and in a way, that's scarier because you're like, it's just unpredictable. Yeah. You don't know where the nukes are going to land, and you don't know if they're going to explode, and that could be more effective a deterrent than knowing the missiles are pinpoint accurate and will hit their target. So you could move to that remote area and be like, I'm perfectly safe in my bunker in this small village in the countryside.
That's true.
They've had that in Ukraine, haven't they? There's like they've developed the most advanced tank in the world, the Russians have.
Yes.
So they're still using like the 1980s T-73s because they just haven't been able to deploy any of the others.
Yeah, it's mysterious they haven't deployed their brand new spanking new tank. It makes you wonder if it actually works. Yeah.
It's actually just a paper cutout.
There was actually a story that's been circulating that I wanted to bring up because it's relating to nuclear weapons. And there was a story circulating social media saying that Russia was going to had a nuclear weapon called the Satan II rocket, or the RS-28 Sarmat.
And first Satan II.
The story going around was that this was a nuclear weapon that could destroy the entire planet if it went off. And
beneath the Planet of the Apes. That's ridiculous.
Dr. Evil.
Yeah, Dr. Evil's stuff.
Yeah.
And this has been checked by some like fact-checking websites and is found to be not true. But the Sarmat rocket, it does exist, and it was replacing the Sarmat, the Satan 1 rocket. But it's kind of, the truth is, this was a story that broke in 2016, and it was actually, back then, I think it was reported that it could destroy an area the size of Texas or France, or I think England and Wales, it said, combined.
It seems smaller when they say Texas, doesn't it?
So,
then you realize how big Texas is.
Yeah. So still huge.
That's scary.
Yeah. But also, because this is just being reported by different websites, no one really knows the size of this thing. I guess that's the message there, though. Like, we say, oh, it could destroy Texas or the planet. Like, there's a big disparity there. What? how big is this thing?
Yeah.
A lot of it is just, oh, yeah, my dick is bigger than yours kind of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's about the confidence that you say it. I think that's a lot of what's going on here.
That's kind of the purpose, though, of nuclear bombs. As we know, the mutually assured destruction stems from the whole, we just really don't know just how powerful these things are and how much destruction they will wreak when they go off. We just don't know. The most powerful bomb tested by Russia was the famous Tsar bomber, which has, 50,000 kilotons, I think, or something crazy like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Of TNT, which is just phenomenally huge. And that's the most powerful bomb ever tested. But that was back in the 60s, so it's almost certain that what they've got today is at least 5 times, maybe even 10 times more powerful than that. And as soon as you get to that level, it's just not even a point trying to comprehend exactly how much it will destroy, because nowhere, like you say, nowhere is safe from the fallout. Even if you don't get, in a way, you might be one of the lucky ones to get killed in the blast.
Yeah.
When it comes to that kind of size bomb, because the effect it will have on the globe in terms of radioactivity and weather systems, which is already pretty crazy, it's just terrifying for the survivors. Which goes back to the question of, would anyone actually use it? And I think ultimately, no. Unless they are literally mad or make a terrible mistake. But then if they make a mistake, I don't see how they could make a mistake and launch all the nukes. It would just be one, the odd one, which obviously would be devastating to whoever gets hit by it, but would be mitigatable in terms of international warfare. But if you launch all the nukes, then you're just mad and you want to destroy the world.
Yeah. Do you think like the... like the tanks, they'd just go for their 1980s old model, as opposed to Satan II.
Yeah.
We'd
probably go for,
Satan II is the last resort.
Mr. President, there is a problem with Satan II.
Satan II is Putin, riding it down off the plane with a cowboy
hat. Shirtless with a cowboy hat on, Oh, no. That's a horrible thought.
It is. Oh, it is. It is.
Well, on that cheery visual image... Martin, I believe you've prepared a quiz for...
I have prepared a quiz because I think I've done a lot more quizzes than I've been host of, so it's time that you guys catch up, and I'm going to be doing the next 8 weeks of quizzes.
Sure. You're not that far behind, but thanks for doing it, though.
Okay. No problem at all, no problem. Okie-dokie,
But we need buzzers, don't we?
You do need buzzers.
Buzzers.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, have you already got them at the ready? Were we this prepared?
I forgot about the buzzer, I'll be honest. Oh, what should I go for? Yeah. What should I go
for? I've got my buzzer ready, but Alex, grab his. I've got a new buzzer, fresh, hot off the press. See if anyone recognizes this, who's listening. This is brand new from the past week.
Ooh. I'm excited. Well, here's
Vincent Weiss played on the 60s show Egghead. Uh-huh. Yeah, I think I want to have a go at Egghead. I think I can make him absolutely terrifying. And I have a concept for Egghead. So let them know over at Warner Brothers. I'm down for egg.
That's Nicolas Cage at this, is that the premiere of his new movie? Is that
yeah, that's right. Yeah, his new movie where he plays Nicolas Cage. Yeah.
That's incredible.
I just love that quote so much every time I listen to it.
Okay. He knows that'd be made into a meme. He knows surely.
Oh,
brilliant. And Alex, what have you gone for?
I've gone for becoming one of my fast favorites.
And it starts right now.
It starts right now.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, the quiz does start right now. Ooh, so,
okay.
Question.
Oh, okay.
Numero here we go. Uno.
Feel free to, if you're in the comments, if you're watching us live right now, feel free to join in. I haven't got any names on the board, but I think we'll be able to remember who's doing what. It doesn't seem to be that many people in this one. Yeah.
Okay, question number one. In Wallace and Gromit, A Grand Day Out, what was the moon made of?
I've been thinking about this. It starts right now.
I heard a John. Whose buzz was that from?
That would be Alex.
That was Alex.
Okay.
Alex.
Well, it's made of cheese.
It's made of cheese. Of course it is. Yeah. Of course it is.
Do they actually say it's made of cheese? It definitely looks like cheese in Wallace and Gromit, but do they actually?
Yeah. I think there's a whole thing of everyone, I haven't seen it in a while actually, but everyone knows the moon's made of cheese, and they go up there and he's like, Stilton? And he's like trying to decipher what it's actually made of. Right?
Yeah. 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 Great scene. Doesn't he decide it tastes like Wensleydale? Isn't that what he decides?
I think so. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
There we go. 1-0 to Alex. Question number two. You're going to update your score, Alex?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Whoops.
My bad. No, you don't have to. It's okay.
No, I'll forget otherwise. Okay. There you go.
Question number two.
Yeah.
Italy beat Wales in their final game of this year's Six Nations.
Incredible.
Incredible. 22-21, last minute try.
That was the score.
incredible sidestep by their fullback, who's amazingly like 11 stone, which is mental for an international runner.
Whoa, that is huge.
But
is there a question here, Martin?
It's tiny. Okay, the question is. But how many games had they lost in the Six Nations prior to this?
And it starts right now.
Well, this Six Nations or...
No, in Six Nations before this.
So in Six Nations history.
How many Six Nations matches in a row, cumulative, up to this one, had they lost?
Five,
okay.
So in Six Nations history up till now?
No, since the last time they won a match.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Played on the 60s show, Egghead.
I'm gonna guess it's been. Actually, it could have been longer. Is this the closest wins?
Yeah.
I'm gonna say it's been 10 years since they won.
10 years. Okay.
No. Okay, let's go 6 years. In which case, there's 5 games each year. So that's 30. I'm going to say 30 games.
You haven't won in 30 games. The answer's 36 games.
Oh,
haven't won
wow.
in 36 wow. games.
Wow.
And they finally won. Yeah, 7 Fair years. Enough. Well done. You're
oh, it was close then. Okay.
Very close. Yeah, no, really good.
Thank you.
Really good. So that's 1-1. That's why, yeah, the celebrations were emphatic. And it was away as well. It wasn't even at home. It was away.
Yeah, which is crazy. Amazing. Like home games always get an advantage, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Well done, Italy.
Yeah. Question number three. The most expensive painting ever sold at auction is Da Vinci's Salvator Mundi, which sold at Christie's New York in 2000. And I said seven here. I think it's 2017. I think I typed that wrong. But how much did it sell for? Again, a second closest win.
I don't actually know. So I'm just going to go for 200 million.
Okay.
Dollars.
Yes, dollars. Yeah, we'll go dollars. Yeah.
Starts, look over there. And it starts right now.
Starts right
now. I think it's going to be less than 200 million. I don't think anyone would pay that much for art, even Da Vinci. I could be wrong. I'm going to go 100 million.
100 million, and Robin says 200 million. The answer is 450.3 million.
Oh, no way.
Oh, okay, my gosh.
Eat my words there. Completely.
Who has that money to burn?
Yeah. That's mental.
2017. It was Badr bin Abdullah, who is the current Saudi Arabian Minister of Culture. I don't know.
Right.
Again, not quite sure how he is.
Because also,
well, they're all part of the royal family, aren't they? They're all related.
Yeah, they all are, aren't they? Yeah.
I mean, maybe not in that case then. Maybe that makes more sense. But like, people say, oh, billionaires. Yeah, they're billionaires, but they don't have that cash on hand. That is paying with something in cash.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, that is,
400, that's imagine next what level. You could buy with 450 million.
You could buy several countries. You absolutely could.
That's insane.
Instead, he bought a painting. And Da Vinci doesn't see a penny. Not fair, mate.
There's also, it's also credited to Da Vinci, but there's question marks over whether it's...
Oh, that's hilarious.
But then it was kind of discovered that it probably was, and so then therefore like the intrigue of this like hidden mysterious painting shot up in value.
Right.
So yeah, pretty mad though. Okay, well done. 2-1 to Robin. So come out of the closest wins in a good place. Question four.
Well,
what is the Octothorpe symbol commonly known as?
What?
Octothorpe. Yes.
Symbol commonly
known. Is that a thing? Octothorpe?
What is the Octothorpe symbol commonly
known? Octothorpe.
Starts, look over there. And it starts right now.
Yes. I don't know why this popped into my mind, because it's doesn't have eight anything. Well, kind of. Is it the infinity symbol?
It's not the infinity symbol, but good guess. That's
because it's kind of eight guess, shape.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I actually don't understand the question. I don't.
What's the symbol also commonly known as? It's called an Octothorpe.
Oh, right. So I'm sorry. So there isn't a company called Octothorpe.
No.
Okay.
It's a symbol. Yeah.
There's a symbol which is technically called the Octothorpe.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, I get it. Sorry. I was thinking there's a company, like, what do they sell? And how on earth does Martin know about them? And why should I care what the symbol is? And do people talk about this all the time? Commonly known as what? Okay, yeah, you're right. There's eight. So eight would have to feature into it somehow, surely.
You would think.
Yeah.
Octothorpe.
I have to admit, this is a real head scratcher.
I'm looking at my keyboard. Is there anything there?
I'd say maybe move away from the octo bit.
Okay.
And more to the thorpe.
Can we have a clue, maybe? Unless Robin wants to guess first.
I couldn't make a guess. Yeah.
It's a very common symbol that's probably reached prominence in the last 15 years, I'd say. Yes, Alex.
The hashtag.
It is the hashtag. Octothorpe.
It's got 8 points.
It's points, yeah.
Yeah.
The hashtag. Yeah. Yeah. It's technically an Octothorpe.
That's cool. Good knowledge. Good knowledge.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it was knowledge, really, but
it is now. It is now. It'll be embedded in your brain forever.
Octothorpe.
Don't Octothorpe. Yes.
Definitely going to use that on a daily basis now.
If anyone wants to contact us, it's Octothorpe.
Yeah.
Just interesting. Okay. Question number five to all. What is a female sheep called?
I think I can make an absolutely terrible one.
That was a Robin and Nicholas.
It's a U.
It is a U.
W-E.
It's a U. Thank you. Well done.
Thank you for making a much very easier good follow-up question to the Octothorpe.
I think what makes a good quiz is a range of ones that you're like, fastest buzzer wins, and then some that people are scratching their head about for like 4 minutes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It's the mix, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. 3-2. Question number six.
Ooh, come on.
Which Bond villain appeared... Well, no, wait. Yeah. Appeared in the most movies. Oh, do you guys have a? That was so close. Who do you think got there first?
And you couldn't say.
It's with the new buzzers as well.
Yeah.
I think you might have got there, Robin, just about.
I'm going to go with Robin because I actually couldn't give you an answer to this one.
Okay.
I can't
really? Okay. I feel like you could.
I can't think of any names. I can think of the actor, but I don't know.
I'm worried that this is a trick question, though. I'm worried that Martin's going to catch me out here because the obvious answer would be Stavro Blofeld.
And it is. No trick question here.
Phew.
It's Blofeld. I think he appeared in 7, if I remember right, from when I looked it up.
Sounds about right.
Quite a number.
Would not have got
quite
that
a number.
One.
Fair enough.
I need to one day actually do a big rewatch of all of them. Well, a watch of most of them, but a rewatch of some of them.
Yeah, I want to go through. I want to do a chronological at some point.
Stop getting Bond wrong.
It's been a while. I've obviously seen Daniel Craig ones, but it's been a long time since I watched the Connery ones or Roger Moore.
Yeah.
I miss them.
Yeah. Mm. Have a rewatch. Lazenby. Anyone?
Yeah, I love that film. Yeah. It's been a while. It's probably been like 2 years at most since
I watched. That Connery nearly turned down the role for James Bond because he didn't understand it.
I don't understand. But you're saying I can hit women? Yeah, sure.
I'm in.
Good. I'm Bond. I'm in. You can call me Bond, James Bond.
The character's name isn't James, it's Bond, James Bond. Okay, sure. Okay.
Do I shake them or hit them?
For anyone currently listening to this after the game and wondering what the hell did we just degrade into, this was an inside joke from our Patreon exclusive episode of the podcast, a little more interesting. So if you're keen to see what this is all about, go and sign up to our Patreon and
or become a YouTube member and you'll have access to those as well. Yeah.
Do I shoot the women?
I'm going to shoot the women.
Do I sleep with them after or before I kill them?
Oh dear.
Wonderful. So that is 5-2.
Is it 5-2? Wait, how many questions?
I don't know.
I thought it was
4-2. 4-2. 3-4-5-6.
4-2.
Six. We've done 6. It's 4-2. Yeah. Right. Sorry, Alex.
Thank you for that. But
question number 7. What is the longest road in the world?
Oh.
Robin, I think you just about got there first.
Ooh, thank you. I now realize I may be wrong, but Route 66 is famous, right?
It is famous, but it's not the longest road in the world.
Darn it.
Starts, look over there. And it starts right now.
Alex is buzzed in.
Well, Route 66 was going to be my guess, and if it's not that, I had another one in the back of my head, but I don't know if it's an actual road or if it's just a name for... Is it the Silk Road?
It's cheeky.
That would be a cheeky answer. Yeah.
Well,
Silk Road doesn't exist anymore, but also it's not a single road.
That's true.
I mean, then you get into kind of philosophical questions, aren't you? Like, how long is a road?
Are we all on a road through life?
Yeah.
I can give you a clue if you like.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll give you two quick clues. The first one is that you're both, well, Robin, you're on the right continent.
Okay.
But it's, well, but it spans two continents. Three, I guess. Anyway, it goes from Alaska all the way down to Argentina.
Oh my gosh.
You know what? I've seen posts of people riding on this, doing this whole journey, and I'm trying
to think. What is that called?
I don't know.
You could probably logic it.
Yeah.
Look over
there.
Potentially.
It starts right now.
Is it something like the is it the Pan American Highway?
Yes.
Is that it?
Well done. That's
amazing.
It.
Amazing.
Pluck that from the deepest recesses of my mind.
Well done. No,
that
really
is
good.
Great
really
work.
Good.
Yeah.
Wow. Nice one. No, 29,800 miles apparently.
Oh.
Which is
just shy of 30,000. Wow.
Long road to walk. Let's just say that.
Do you think they just gave up? Like one member of the road crew is like really keen. We've got to make 30,000 miles. And he was like, no, I'm tired. We're stopping here. It's 200, whatever. Not worth it.
There's no more road to give. I mean, the
Let's make more land. Get it to 3,000.
We're at the sea. We can't go any further.
I'm going to say that this road probably, like, A lot of these roads will be called, I imagine, will be called other things as well, right?
Yeah, it probably goes down, like, call it something else. Yeah.
No, but as in, like, when you're in the American part, it will be Route 34 will be part of it, and then it's all it all links up to this one thing called the Pan American Highway. That's my guess. It's not Pan American Highway Alaska, Pan American Highway California. You know, it's like it's like a combination of all these different roads. But yeah, that's what I've got down anyway.
That is awesome. Yeah.
Nice. Question number 8.
Oh, he's catching up. He's going to take over.
What kind of species is an aye-aye? A-Y-E, A-Y-E. Yes, Alex.
I believe that is a fish.
An aye-aye is not a fish. Ah,
thought the confidence would help there.
An annoyingly, I know what you're talking about, but I can't think.
I'll take animal and or species.
All species.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a monkey?
Yes, it is. Well, it's the world's largest nocturnal primate, and the aye-aye is a long femur, massive, a long femured, long fingered. Sorry, lemur.
Long femured linger.
Long fingered lemur, native to Madagascar.
Oh, nice.
Yes, that's right. Because they're in the movie, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it is. That's what it is.
Thank you. Thank you. That's generous. Giving me the point.
No. So that's the right lines. It's the right lines. It's all good. Question number 9, Alex. You need these two to tie.
Yeah, you can take. I think he will. I think I can take this. Yeah.
Okay.
Why? Why? Based on what?
The pressure.
Based on past experience.
That's true. Okay. Question number 9. With his quick finger on the buzzer. That tends to do his buzzer work is second to none. Question number 9. What is the most commonly used vowel in the English language?
Look over there. And it starts right now.
He's got it.
Yeah, but I don't know. The most commonly used vowel. It's one of the two. Is it E?
It is E.
It is E.
Yes.
Is the most commonly used vowel. Well done, 5-4.
That's why if your wordle starting word has to include an E, because it's
Right. Are you on the Wordles, Martin?
No, I've never done it. But then I've also never done Candy Crush. You know, these big big games that have become... I look at Candy Crush, I'm still not quite sure what's going on, I'll be honest.
Yeah, it's just chaos on screen. Yeah.
It's probably really simple in reality, but I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I felt the same with Wordle, like seeing people post their things on Twitter. I was like, no, I'm not doing it. But then it was like, I'm part of the cult. It's like part of the ship, part of the crew now. As soon as you join.
Likewise. I was resisting it, and then my mum started it, and I was like, okay, mum, I'll join. And then, now I'm in. I'm hooked.
So what's the idea?
The idea is that you snort 2 lines of cocaine and then try to write a poem.
Nice. It's it's the New York Times Wordle thing, and you only do it once a day, but you've got to basically guess what the 5-letter word is, and you've got 6 attempts to do it. And you put in a 5-letter word, and it tells you if any of the letters are in the word, and if they're in the right place in the word, then it lights up green. And if they're in the wrong place in the word, it's yellow. So
you know they're in the word, but they're not where they should be.
And then it rules out the letters, and you've got to do it in as few attempts as possible, basically.
And you only get one guess word, and then you have to then try and figure it out.
No. You get you can do it in six attempts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah. So you could guess completely different words every time. It's very doable.
I might give it a go.
This podcast is not sponsored by the New York Times Wordle, just so everyone knows.
Yeah, and you can play it for free right now.
By going on to justinteresting.com/justinteresting. Question number 10. Alex, you've got to get this one to...
I genuinely think you might.
Well, I'm happy with how close it's been either way.
There's 1 point for this question, but there are three
components?
Answers are needed for the 1 point.
Oh, what?
So if you get it wrong, it goes, I'm not going to say what's right or wrong. It just goes back
to God,
into...
If this is a rugby union question, I'm going to flip out. Martin's frantically writing another
question. The Women's Cricket World Cup is now... Question 10. What's projected to be the 3 most populated countries in the world by 2100?
I think I can make an absolute influencer for egg.
Sorry. So I don't know the answer, but I'm guessing Alex will know the two I'm about to say. So it's about that third one. Surely China and India are two of the three. The third? Most populous countries in the world by 2100. So the population is going to be growing. Brazil?
No.
Damn. Ooh. I should have gone somewhere else. Oh, no.
I mean, you're saying, oh, no. I was thinking the obvious one. But I could be wrong. I mean, maybe I'm wrong with this. Okay. I don't even know if their population's going up. I think it's probably going down. So I'm going to be wrong as well. But India, China, and the US.
US is predicted to be number four.
Oh, no.
Is it Nigeria?
It's Nigeria.
Wow, really?
Yes. Nigeria is currently... So just to put this into a bit of context, Nigeria's population is currently 206 million as of 2017.
That is quite populous, isn't it?
It is. Okay. And when we look at... So Brazil is above it in sixth place. Nigeria is seventh place, 206 million. Brazil is 212 million. It's predicted that by 2100, Brazil will have dropped to 165 million, whereas Nigeria will have risen from 206 million to 791 million, making it more populous than China.
Oh my God. Is Nigeria like a really big country?
It is big. Yeah. Seventh in the world in terms of population, but they're the only country... I think the only country predicted to still see like sustained population growth in sub-Saharan Africa that's by 2100. It's like basically they're going to have like a huge explosion when most countries around the world are not.
Fair enough.
But geographically, they're big, but they're not on the scale of the USA, are they, Martin?
In terms of the size of the country.
Yeah, geographically. They're huge, but I don't think they're that as huge as... They're quite cramped, I think.
They are quite...
Okay. So 623,000 kilometers... Sorry. 623,000 kilometers...
Square
kilometers versus USA's 9.8 million. Yeah, geez, man, that's going to be...
They're not particularly big. I mean, they look like... On Google Maps, they look like the same size as Spain or France or something.
Mm. That's going to cause issues.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That's mad.
It's going to be Judge Dredd kind of big tower blocks.
Yeah. So what is it? What's causing that population growth in Nigeria?
They're just very busy.
Yeah, I think it genuinely is. It's like, they have big families, and
I think religion's got a lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Cultural as well. Religion, yeah.
Yeah, as in they don't practice contraception, as well as obviously having the not ready access to it because of economic reasons as well.
I mean, you think about China, for instance, which is seen as it's a big country, but it of course has such a massive population, but they're 9.5 or 9.6 million square kilometers, so we're talking a tenth of that.
Wow.
And land space for more people. That's going to be a bit of a worry actually by that time, but we'll be long dead, so it's fine. That's what we say about all these things,
I right? hope not.
How long are you expecting to live? You're a little bit younger. I'll be well dead by then.
I'm kind of hoping for like a cyberpunk like not cyberpunk future, like the dystopian parts, but I'm hoping that I can upgrade myself by then, you know, get a bit of a bionic suit going on. I'm hoping that we can live to at least 500 and we'll still be doing the podcast.
Least 500. Wow. That's optimistic in our lifetimes.
With our like 20,000th podcast episode.
Hey, that'd be a target. What's the target? The Super Show is definitely on target for that by the end of this year, I think.
Super Show are beating us by quite a lot, yeah.
They are. Well ahead.
They are consistent. I'll give them that. Okay, and good. I mean, I'm not, so that sounds like I'm doing it.
Yeah, they.
Okay. well done, Robin. Congratulations on a quiz.
Thank you. It was a close one, Alex. Earned every point and came very close. So it was a good quiz. Thank
don't
you.
Don't patronize me, Robin.
That brings you level, Robin, actually.
Level with you, Martin.
We're only one behind Alex. Although
we're not. That scoreboard isn't accurate. Alex has five.
No,
guys.
He doesn't. No,
he's done three.
I can actually sticking to four for now. Us, I think. Let me update.
No, that's fine. I don't.
There you go. Yeah. Robin, you've got three now. Did you say I've got more?
I believe you have five, Alex. I pretty bet. Sure.
There we go. Okay, so that's an accurate representation of where we all are. We need to decide at some point when this season's going to end. Because, you know, I'll have won the second season then and still not have the trophy.
you do need to send me your address, though.
Okay, I'm going to send you my address after this. Like, and then there'll be no excuse.
Like, genuinely, just send me your address.
Okay. Okay, I mean, I don't almost... At this point, though, I almost don't want it to end. But I do actually want the travel mug, so...
Yeah, yeah. I'll put English guy in Edinburgh, and hopefully it'll reach you, because there aren't that many of them, are there?
Just address it to Alex, Edinburgh. It'll reach somebody.
It'll reach me, yeah.
Alex Brown, Edinburgh. Do you reckon that would actually reach you? Probably not.
It to Nicola Sturgeon. She watches the podcast, so she'll know where to find me.
Good.
Make sure it gets off the right pair of hands.
Hand deliver it to you. Yeah, knock on your door.
Okay. Do you guys want the bonus question?
Yeah, go on.
Shits and giggles. Okay. How good are you from your imperial to metric?
Oh,
perfect. Spot on. No. Every single.
Yeah, this should be really fun then, because it's quite simply how many yards are in a mile, and I just want to know how far off you guys are going to be.
How many yards in a mile?
Literally, I was thinking, I have no idea how many yards are in a mile. No idea whatsoever.
I couldn't even tell.
I know it's more than 10 and less than a million.
How many yards are in a mile?
Thinking about this, that Vincent Weiss played on the season show Egghead.
That's a really good buzzer.
Thanks. So it's probably not the case anymore because they've actually codified and stratified it, but I can bring a bit of a history to this.
Okay,
we just want to
and explain my logic. So
I'm interested. Go on.
I'm going to guess 1,000 yards, and the reason I'm going to guess that is because the word mile comes from the Latin mile, which is the Roman term for a measure of distance, which is 1,000 paces, and a typical pace when marching is 3 feet, and 3 feet is a yard. There so that's go. My okay. that's my guess.
Okay. Nice. Nice.
I actually think Robin's kind of spot on there. But just to be
look over there. And it starts right now.
Just to be a dick, I'm gonna say 1,001.
Well, 1,001 is correct. Oh no, it's closer. Apparently it's 1,760.
Okay.
Which makes me think that does that mean that their strides were really far apart or really short?
They were smaller back then. Yep.
So
probably
if it was 1,000, it'd be 1,000 paces, but actually it's 1,700 feet. So that means that they're walking.
It means they've got bigger strides, right?
They're walking 6 feet per stride. Madness.
Oh yeah. What?
Just over 3 feet. Yeah, that's huge.
How many, in terms of meters, how many meters is a mile? It's like 1,200 meters is a mile. It's more than a kilometer.
It's five. Isn't it? A kilometer is 5/8 of a mile. Isn't it? That's all I remember. From
that's all I remember school. As well.
1,300.
Right.
So is that 300 extra meters?
Well, because there's 90 centimeters.
Oh, it's so stupid, isn't it? It's all so stupid. Come on. Yards. I don't even know. I didn't even know a yard was 3 feet.
1,600 meters. And it's 1,609.34 meters.
Wow.
What do you think is the most ridiculous unit of measurement you've seen? Because recently I saw a news story that was describing the size of a meteor that was about to impact the Earth, and they described it as half the size of a giraffe. Half a giraffe.
That's not useful at all.
That's
not remotely useful.
It was about 5 feet.
That's got to be a joke. As
half a giraffe, which I thought that was an. I mean, they must have done it just for the, the added clickbait and frustration.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what is quite silly is the way that the difference between pints in the UK and America. Like the UK has the imperial pint, which is 5.68, whereas in America they have what's called a liquid pint, which is like under 500 mils.
Oh, no wonder they're... Ah, okay.
Which is kind of silly. Mm. And then I would also... What the hell? They've also... It looks like they've also got another, you know, pint. They've also got a dry pint. That was a dry pint.
What the hell is a dry... That's an empty glass.
Dry, slightly different liquid measures. Are you dry pint? Is it for... And what's it for? What's a dry pint for?
It really annoys me in US recipes, like cups. What a cup.
Yeah, that is...
A cup of what?
Yeah, it's just so annoying.
I get the basic idea of like, if you measure it all in cups, then you can change a recipe depending on how much of whatever you have. You know, it's based on ratios rather than grams. And I kind of get that. But it goes out the window when an egg is required in a recipe. It's like so many cups and then one egg. It's like, what?
One cup of eggs. What? It might be one and a half eggs.
Yeah. But it's stupid that they've chosen to codify cups, you know, because a cup is a completely different thing depending on the cup you're using. And then so they decided at some point it would be useful to have a regular measurement for what a cup is. And as soon as you start doing that, you might as well just convert it to grams and stop referring to cups.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you're going to standardize and regulate the size of a cup when measuring recipes... Just switch to grams.
Crying out loud.
Apparently one cup is 8 fluid ounces, which is also a bullshit measurement.
Yeah, eight ounces.
Eight fluid ounces.
So stupid.
Meaningless. Utterly meaningless.
Yeah. So meaningless.
Yeah, but then we say this, but we, in the UK, we have a kind of a stupid, horrible hybrid of the two systems, which is probably more confusing.
We do. Well, now, thanks to Brexit, we're free to use imperial measurements for food and shops.
Thank God.
We don't have to use metric at all. Yeah.
Now we're free.
Now we're free. It's a gladiator thing.
Now we're free.
Boris Johnson's fading in the background.
Oh, no, don't do that.
We are slowly turning into old men yelling at clouds now. So.
It happened a long time ago. There you go. But yeah, I think we should, in terms of the pint's nice. Like, it's a whole pint, but the measurement is stupid, 568 milliliters. It's silly. It's silly.
It is silly. But it's standard. It's to be expected there.
Liter and a demi-liter. Done.
That's nice and neat.
The idea of a demi-liter. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's a little bit less than a pint, but, you know, charge me less. We're fine.
I like centiliters just because it's so unnecessary.
It's used on wine. That's about it.
But then to make you feel like you're drinking a smaller glass than you are.
But then you have to go up to the bar more frequently, though, in fairness, if you're drinking slightly less and they're charging less. Get a boot. Get a Das boot every single time.
Yeah. Huge steins of like 2 centimeters.
Those things. Yeah.
Yeah.
German man. Yeah.
We are men.
Well, Martin, thank you so much for the quiz. And congratulations on your victory, Robin. I'm not.
Thank you. Thank you, Martin, for a great quiz. And thank you, Alex, for graciously losing. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Just to build up the suspense before he goes and wins every quiz from now on. Even the ones where it's Martin versus me, Alex will win it.
Somehow.
Exactly. But let us know in the comments on YouTube or on Twitter what you thought of today's discussion. Hopefully it wasn't too depressing.
Sorry.
Is there anything else we need to say? Thanks everyone so much for watching. And if you do want to catch us live next time, then feel free to support us on Patreon. Any amount of money will get you access to these live podcasts. And if you don't want to support us on Patreon for whatever reason, which is totally fine, we're still going to be doing these live at least once a month for everyone on YouTube. So if you're following us on YouTube, either way, you'll still have access to more live podcasts than we were otherwise doing before. So win-win. Thanks everyone so much for watching. Hope you all have a fantastic week. And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.